from Toronto to Los Angeles. It's the Fourth Period Live with David Pagnotta and Dennis Bernstein.
To find the lovers of the bar is where I go. Me and my friends at the table doing shots, drinking fast, and then we talk slow. Come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop it, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance, and now I'm singing like,
welcome to the show. This is the Fourth Period Live. I'm Dave Pagnotta here in Toronto. That's Dennis Bernstein in Los Angeles. Happy Mother's Day, all the mothers out there. Mom, everybody, happy Mother's Day. A lot of action happening in the National Hockey League, as everybody knows. We're down to the conference finals, DB. Nashville-Anaheim Game 2 goes tonight, 7:30 Eastern.
No underdogs, Dave.
Nope. Definitely not. Proven. Definitely proven in the first couple games as Ottawa beats Pittsburgh yesterday in overtime. Nashville's leading 1-0 on the Ducks. No surprises anymore for anybody. We got...
Your buddy Bobby Ryan did well.
Yeah. Nice little overtime winner. That was pretty good. Got the Jets going, too. Little backhander. Motoring his way down the ice on the break. The Sens leading at 1-0. We're going to talk to Brent Wallace at TSN. He's the Sens' main man, basically, out there in Ottawa. He'll be jumping on the program to talk to us about that win and about the series so far. Pete Jensen, the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, will be joining us in the program as well. Josh Brewster, who is the Ducks postgame radio host of Duck Calls, he'll be joining us later on in the program in about an hour's time. We'll talk to Jim Fox, his main color man for the LA Kings, and he's covering the Preds and Ducks as well for that Western Conference series. But DB, you surprised at which teams are leading 1-0 right now?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I just think you could throw a blanket over these teams and pick out two and you get them to the cup final. Pittsburgh, look, how could you overcome that seven-game series? You know, that was just a monumental win in Washington. So do you think that he didn't come in with a lot of juice for game one against Ottawa? Yeah, but I think, look, Dave, I picked Pens in six. I picked Ducks in six, but either one of these four teams can emerge. I think there's just so much parity in this league. You look at Ottawa, look, if you're going to get performances like that from Bobby Ryan and Craig Anderson and certainly Eric Carlson, can they beat Pittsburgh? I guess so, because Pittsburgh didn't really offer much up yesterday. They didn't really attack much. They have to shoot more. They have to get more offense. I think it's just a matter of gear shifting. You know, I think that's what you see. I think it's the same thing with the Ducks, Dave. I think that they had a, you know, up-tempo offensive team in Edmonton that they faced, and they had a, you know, monumental Game 7 that they finally got over the hump. They exercised their Game 7 demons.
Yeah.
And then they have to downshift and play a team again, like Nashville, who's really good defensively, who doesn't give up a lot. They wound up losing the Game 3-2 in overtime. But I suspect that the one thing I do suspect, regardless of my selections, is you're going to see games like you saw the first Game 1 and Game 1 in Anaheim and in Pittsburgh. These are going to be grinding out 3-2, 2-1 games. I don't suspect we're going to see a 6-5 game like we saw with the Senators and Rangers in the previous round. I don't think we're going to see a 7-0 game like we saw with Edmonton and Anaheim. These are going to be ground-out games, and they may not be that entertaining, Dave. They may have drama, but they're not going to be high-scoring games.
Well, let's dive a little bit more into Ottawa and Pittsburgh here as our man here, Brent Wallace at TSN, joining us. B-Dub, what's up, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
You like that? Can I call you that from now on, or is that a no-go?
It's better than what you've called me in the past. So
fair enough. Are you surprised at all with the 1-0? I know you cover the Sens on a consistent basis. You've been doing it for a long time. You're as close to this team as pretty much anyone. But does this 1-0 lead after yesterday's overtime win surprise you at all, considering it is against a Pittsburgh team that, you know, needed to get a few extra steps against the Capitals?
I'm not sure. I'm going to say no. Of course, I always think Ottawa's going to lose every game. I'm just jaded that way.
Right.
but I think just the way that Ottawa plays, and if they can always manage to play that stifling neutral zone trap and shut you down and keep you to the outside, that they stand a chance. And Pittsburgh obviously coming off the emotional game seven win. They didn't have a lot of rest. They are pretty banged up. I just think that they had a shot. And Craig Anderson was pretty good last night. I mean, they gave Pittsburgh five power plays, including a 5-on-3 for 45 seconds.
Yeah.
They still managed to shut it down. And so Craig Anderson deserved a lot of credit in that game. And I think they can play with Pittsburgh as long as they stay confined to that trap game, if you will. But as I just said, he doesn't think there's going to be 6-5 games. I think there might be. Both these teams got speed that they can do stretch passes and end up on breakaways. I think you might see one of these games get up there.
What's Pajot been kind of eating every morning or outside of his you know meal routine? Is he getting something special in the breakfast too? Because this man just keeps on bringing it and bringing it.
Yeah, I don't know what all he eats in the morning. I know he likes his chicken parm in the afternoon, but he's just one of those guys that every once in a while you know that there's a playoff-type performer. Like, I won't put him in the Justin Williams category, but for Ottawa, he has certainly found a way to be a playoff guy. Not only does he go up against usually the top offensive center on the other team, whether it's Sidney Crosby or if it's Patrice Bergeron or whatnot with Boston, he just thrives on it. And he's a guy that scored 20 goals last year. It's not like he can't find offense, but what he's done in the postseason with, I believe it's 12 goals in 29 career playoff games is pretty impressive.
You know, Brent, it's been 10 years since the Senators got to the Cup Final. But that team, 105-point team, recognizable players, star players like Alfie, like Spezza, like Danny Heatley, powerful team, good offensive team. This team, under the radar, actually a minus goal differential this year, really came out of nowhere. Now they're not an underdog because they're in the top four. But how has the city embraced this team as opposed to the team 10 years ago?
Yeah, and that team 10 years ago was impressive. I mean, they rolled through the playoffs, right. Five games each of the first three series. It was fun to watch until they got to Anaheim, and then they just got crushed. But this team is just built on that. All right, let's start from the beginning when they had Clark MacArthur go down in training camp, and he's a huge part of this team off the ice or in the room, if you will. And so guys were devastated early on with that. Then it came the new coach, whole new coaching staff, a whole new system that took lots of guys time to adjust to. And then, of course, Craig Anderson and his wife battling cancer. And there's been so many different little things that have happened that the guys have rallied around each other, and it's brought the city closer to that team with everybody wanting to see guys do well based on what's gone on off the ice this year.
I'm loving how politely everyone is celebrating, too. We're seeing this all over social media where they're jumping on the streets when it's a red light and then, okay, we'll go back and let all the cars pass. So cute.
Yeah, and we're very polite that way. We really appreciate just how the people react. And they call it the Sens Mile, but it's about 500 feet.
Right.
people come and celebrate. But, hey, you know what? There's been lots of fans that shown up when the team plane has landed after Boston, after New York.
Yeah.
At 1:30 in the morning just to get out and wave to guys as they drive by in cars. Like, it's pretty impressive. I know what happens in other cities, but good on Ottawa for the guys who come out to wave at 1:30 in the morning.
You know, Brent, one of the guys who've really stood up here, and he's had a rough season, was Bobby Ryan. And he said after the game yesterday that it took him 82 games to figure out the system and where it needs to be. Is it that hard of a system that you need to figure out a 1-3-1? And it takes you 82 games. But, you know, Bobby's had a real challenge. But just Guy, how is he to deal with day-to-day? I mean, he seems very matter-of-fact. After that press conference last night, he was like, I can't tell you why Pajot and Ryan work together well. I can't tell you why we do well in overtime. But how's he been to deal with all season?
He's very good. He's one of my, I guess, favorite players to talk to interview, because he'll give you some pretty honest, non-cliche answers. And I've always really liked that about him. I think his 82 games a bit tongue-in-cheek. He just had a struggling year. One was he had the broken finger and he missed a bunch of time, and that set him back. And then he played the final 82nd game that year, and then he's into the playoffs, and he certainly turned it around in the postseason. But there have been some struggles this year. I mean, he showed up late to a meeting in the preseason and was benched for a game. He was benched for another game in Toronto for, I think, missing curfew, although they've kind of just kept that quiet for the most part. So he's had some issues. Obviously, he went through losing his mom in July. Like, he's had a lot to deal with on his plate. A new baby this year, all that stuff. So, but for him, the adjustment to that system was tough because Bobby's always been a perimeter-type player, and now they want him to use that 6'2" size frame in front of the net. They want him battling in front. And so it just took him a while to adjust to it. He just wasn't used to it, but he certainly found a way to elevate his game in the postseason.
Another player that's kind of stepped up in the last few games, kind of closing out the series against New York and picking up a point and a plus two in game one against Pittsburgh, Mark Stone has seemed to be, at least from an optic standpoint, contributing a lot more offensively. What have you seen in him in the last couple of weeks that has kind of got him going a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a knee injury, it could be anything at this time of year, but he was battling something at the end of the year.
Right.
Where it looks like he caught a rut, and whether it twisted his knee or not, he was never the same type player after that until later in this playoffs. He's come around, and I'm not sure if it's because things have started to heal more or he's just found a way to play through it. But certainly early on in the playoffs, he was struggling. I mean, there was a time, this is one of Ottawa's premier top players at forward who had played the fewest minutes of anybody on the ice in the first period of a Boston game series. And so you knew that he was struggling, but for whatever reason, things have turned around for him. I'm not sure exactly what the elixir is, or if it's just now these different line mates, as Guy likes to change line mates on a regular basis. But for Mark, it's been an impressive turnaround of late, because he certainly was struggling early on.
Game two is tomorrow night in Pittsburgh, 8 p.m. Eastern start. Do you anticipate this flow continuing? What do you see as, just before we let you go, just from a response standpoint, from Pittsburgh's point of view, what are you expecting to see out of the Penguins to combat the fact that they're down 1-0 in the series?
But I'm not, I'll admit, with covering Ottawa, I don't see every Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that, and maybe you guys can help me out here, they've lost 4 of their last 6 games. Now, I know they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, so it's about winning the series, but this is a team that's right now seems to be in a bit of a funk. They've had 3 games of the last 5 where they've had 22 or less shots. I know they're banged up, and so I'm just curious if this team can continue on the way they're playing right now and winning hockey games. But I expect, being the defending Stanley Cup champions and seeing the way they saw perhaps a Ranger team push back against Ottawa in Game 3 and dominate, that they will come out and they will be a very dominant team tomorrow. But I'm just not sure if this team is the one that started really well in the playoffs or the one that's lost 4 of their last 6.
Yeah, it's funny because you even saw it, in that game yesterday where Kessel, a little more visibly frustrated on the ice. Even Malkin, more frustrated as he's going to the bench. You didn't really see that very often, even in the regular season for this team.
Yeah, and they did hit 3 posts. They had great scoring that way. But again, you got to put them in, and I'm not sure that what team it is. And I haven't seen them enough to judge. I'm just surprised that they've lost 4 of their last 6 games.
Well, they can either tie this thing up tomorrow night or be down another one, 2-0 to Ottawa. That game happens tomorrow at 8 o'clock Eastern. Brent, really appreciate you taking the time to join us, man.
Anytime. You go always and get a hold of me.
There we go. That's Brent Wallace. Thank you. Of TSN, this is the guy that, he's surrounding this team and has for, years. And to get an understanding from his perspective on some of these players like Bobby Ryan, like you were saying, DB, bringing him up, and even with Mark Stone kind of getting things going underway, his game underway a little bit more. It's interesting to see because, Dennis, we saw it yesterday. There was no hiding the fact that Kessel and Malkin and a few other guys were kind of chirping at each other and yelling, and you see the frustration coming out of them. I don't know if it's a combination of the last few games and losing those last few games, or if it's just not being able to bury too many chances and the bounce is not going their way yesterday.
So we did 10 minutes on the centers and we didn't talk about Erik Karlsson.
Who? That guy. Oh, yeah.
That's the way they play, Dave.
Yeah, you're right. And look, and he's been fantastic in these first 2 rounds, and he was, solid yesterday without a doubt. But you're right. They're spreading things out a lot more. And when you've got Pageot doing that, he's got 8 goals. Bobby Ryan picks up his 5th goal in that overtime win. Pageot with an assist, surprisingly his first assist of the playoffs. But this is a team that's spreading things out.
And they're doing what they need. You're having Bobby Ryan block shots, right? Which you normally don't see in a February regular season game against Carolina. So they're doing what's necessary to win, and they're a tough team to. You're not going to get a lot of opportunities. So I think when you go to your frustration point that you talk about, so when you get limited chances and you don't close in and you hit post and crossbars, it boils over a little bit, and this team expects to win. Look, does Pittsburgh come in expecting to win? Yes. Are they going to have frustrations through game one? And Brett makes a great point. They did lose 4 out of 6. They haven't played well since, I guess, what, game? I mean, they played a solid game in game 7, but there was no means a dominating performance. It's more a referendum on what the Capitals did or didn't do. But they're frustrated, but again, I think they're going to bounce back, and I think this is a long series. So I think they'll even it in Pittsburgh and try to get one in Ottawa before coming back to Pittsburgh for game 5.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, like you said, this is the defending Stanley Cup champions. And whether or not you want to use the concussion Crosby thing as an excuse from overall performance or not, they have a number of players on this team that have been there before that know what it takes to get over these kinds of humps. And they'll certainly try to do that tomorrow. We'll talk more Pittsburgh later on in the program. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pete Jensen, the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, will join us. That's Dennis. I'm Dave. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. I'm Dave here in Toronto. That's Dennis in L.A. Going to keep things going here on the program. Game 2 between the Nashville Predators, the Anaheim Ducks, taking place tonight, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, at the Ponda Center. Good
it's
old Ponda.
It's the Ponda, not the Ponda Center.
Yeah, just the Ponda? Is that how? I don't know.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry.
Get it straight. You know. You've been there.
I know. I am. I leave early enough to get to the rink on time, but that's okay.
You know, they give us Reese's Pieces over there for free.
That's not bad.
They bag them up with a logo on it and everything, so it's great.
Nice. Yeah, we get popcorn in Toronto. And you know what? The ice cream is great. That too. That's a winner here at the ACC in Toronto. But we'll shift from that. And we're going to talk a little league-wide stuff for a little bit here. Pete Jensen, senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, joining us here on the program right now. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Wanted to dive into some of the movement we've seen in the last, this week and the week prior, with some of the goaltending movement that's kind of happened. And Scott Darling now heading over to Carolina, signing a 4-year deal with them. Ben Bishop gets traded to Dallas. Signing a 6-year contract with the Stars. It seems like unless they can trade Antti Niemi or Kari Lehtinen, that Niemi is probably going to be the guy bought out. But different goaltending situations in both of these markets. I understand there's going to be more movement for both of these teams from a roster standpoint, but from a goaltending standpoint, how much better improved are these are both of these clubs, Dallas and Carolina, now that they've, you'd hope, solidified their goaltending situation?
Yeah, no question. You're talking about two of the weakest goaltending teams in the league over the past couple of years. Even Dallas last year, when they were one of the top scoring teams in the league, they struggled on the back end, obviously took a step back in terms of their defensemen this year. I think there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of roster movement to shore up their blue line. But Ben Bishop is a big upgrade over Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi. I would expect that Niemi is the guy that's going to be exposed in the expansion draft. And then if he's not taken, potentially bought out. As far as Ben Bishop, though, this is a guy that with offensive support, which he didn't really have in L.A. for his short stint. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning this year were a big disappointment offensively. They were not putting forth the goal support that he had seen in years past. You're talking about a guy that's been among the top 10 goalies in wins over the past 3-4 years. I think Ben Bishop is a huge upgrade for them, but still work needed to be done. Carolina, I really like that move, Scott Darling, because I think Scott Darling, you look at his save percentage over the past 3 seasons with Chicago as the backup, only Carey Price has had a better save percentage over that span. So that's, you know, a high acclaim for him. And he has the chance now to step forward and win that job from Cam Ward. And, you know, push that team forward, because that's been a team in Carolina that has been very close to making the playoffs the past two seasons, despite a very young roster and up-and-coming defenseman. I think that defenseman unit is going to get even better this coming season with Jacob Slavin, Noah Hanifin, and, of course, if Justin Falk can stay healthy. So I think that this could be a nice little push for Carolina to get them into the playoffs next season. So great move by them. And I think great move by both of these teams to get their address their biggest need before the expansion draft, before free agency, just get it out of the way so that now you can shore up the rest of your roster.
Yeah, I give points for, certainly for both, but with Carolina, it looks like they're just on the cusp of kind of shifting. And we saw it, you know, throughout the season, but it looks like the things are going to be shifting for them. What do you suspect? Because we see Cam Ward and Eddie Lack both with one year left on their deal. Ward's got the no trade, the modified no trade. You what do you feel would be their best approach in terms of who the, you know, either the number two or the, you know, 1B guy is going to be heading into next season?
Yeah, I mean, they've been very loyal to Cam Ward over the years. I expect them to give him a chance again, just based on what we've seen over the past 5 years plus, even though they haven't made the playoffs. Eddie Lack's probably going to be the odd man out. Maybe he gets waived. Maybe he gets, you know, just maybe they carry three goalies for a little bit. I know a number of teams have done that in the past couple of years. But I would suspect that definitely it'll be Cam Ward and Scott Darling. And Darling will be given an opportunity to separate himself. But definitely Cam Ward will still be getting starts, at least in the short term. But it's going to be interesting to see that one develop because that team has a lot of potential. We saw offensively what they did down the stretch. Elias Lindholm really burst onto the scene, and of course Sebastian Aho. So they have some nice pieces, and now they have some goaltending depth to work with moving forward.
You know, Dave, one of the reasons I have Pete on, number one, he does great stuff on NHL Network with the fantasy stuff, and I think we're both ignorant when it comes to fantasy stuff. Plus, he's a New Yorker, so, you know, obviously I'm going to put him on the air there. But, Pete, I want to know one thing. Like, how does one become the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com? What's the progression? How did you get to the point where you are at this point in time where you're leading the pack and you're on TV telling about what selection people should make?
Yeah, I mean, I started right when I started working for the league in 2011. I was asked to contribute. I had a writing background. I had, you know, a diverse sports background. So I was from Penn State University. So I was just trying to throw my name into the fire, get experience with that stuff. And, you know, the more you get with this fantasy stuff and statistical stuff of any sport, the more you're immersed in it and then you continue to move forward with it, the more experience you get. And, you know, I was a big hockey fan already and love watching the game. So it's just a combination of, I would say, the persistence of in the work ethic to try to you know, improve my knowledge of the game. And year after year, I've been at the league for over 5 years now, and I think my knowledge of the game has increased with each game I watch, with each year that's passed. And it's been a fun opportunity because I did a lot of great work with Matt Cubetta, who was leading the operation for a while, and now you know, he moved on to other things. And we have, you know, the growing international department at the NHL, and he's kind of taken the reins with that. And now I've had the opportunity to take it a step forward and bring it onto broadcast TV, which has been an honor for me and a lot of fun to work with guys like EJ Raddick, Michelle McMahon. It's been a lot of fun this year to, you know, just raise the bar a little bit for our fantasy coverage. And it's kind of, you know, it's a niche sport, no question, but it's pretty big right now, whether you're talking about the year-long formats or the daily formats with stuff like DraftKings. It continues to grow with each passing year, and it's been a fun opportunity for me to take that on to start my career.
Pete, since you're in the New York market, I want to touch on the Rangers. A lot of people picked them to win the series against Ottawa. They didn't. A lot of questions in the offseason. If you were Scott Gorton, how do you make this team better? How do you get them over the hump? Or can you at this point in time with their roster?
I mean, it's tough. They have a lot of money invested into Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi, each of whom I think were big liabilities in the regular season. and were exposed as well in the postseason. A lot of those late leads that slipped away, I think, were due to the deficiencies on the blue line for New York. This team has been lacking a true number one center for years. Mm-hmm. I think Mika Zibanejad proved that at least moving forward, you know, you have a guy, you know, I know he's going to be an RFA, but at least you know that he's a guy that could be at least your number two center and that when he's healthy, he can do damage on each end of the ice. I still think, though, they're lacking a number one center, and this is a team that's right up against the salary cap every year. So it's going to be really interesting to see who they're able to expose in the expansion draft, if they're able to get someone to waive a no-movement clause, potentially like Rick Nash. We'll see. I mean, they have Pavel Buchnevich. I think I don't know if it's going to be under Vigneault, but I think he has some, you know, potential down the road to become a top six forward for the Rangers and first power play guy. They're going to have to work between the lines because there's very little wiggle room for them. Maybe a buyout for one of those defensemen because they're both under contract for a while, Staal right. and Girardi. But, yeah, I think number one center and then just, you know, I like their defensemen outside of Staal and Girardi. I think McDonough had an amazing playoff. Brendan Smith, pleasant surprise. Brady Shea is going to be a star in this league. But it's about figuring out those depth defensemen and putting good players alongside the McDonoughs and Brady Sheas of the world.
Well, you didn't bring up Derek Stepan, so I assume that you think that that's the weak link there, and if they had to make a move on a player, that would be the guy?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the move they made for Brassard, you know, trading him for Zibanejad was a great high upside move to move a guy who's, you know, a sure thing. You know what that Derek Stepan's going to bring to the table at this point in his career, but is he the dynamic number one center they need? I would say by this point, we can all agree he's not, so that may be a guy who could be expendable to a team looking for a win-now type move, adding Derek Stepan as a second or third-line center potentially. But again, there's a lot of constraints that the Rangers are working with, and the work is cut out for Gordon here in the offseason.
Let's go down a couple hours, down to 95. The other team that got eliminated, right? You're not trading Alex Ovechkin from Washington, right, Pete?
Right.
So what do you do there?
It's tough. I mean, they have a lot of expiring contracts, whether you talk about Shattenkirk and TJ Oshie. I know it seems like Oshie wants to stay, but he might be a little too expensive to keep there. They got Justin Williams for the Game 7 heroics. He was very good in the playoffs over the past 2 years, but didn't get it done in Game 7 when they really needed him. There's going to be some changes with this group. They have the key pieces. I think that the way that the playoff bracket has hurt them in the past two seasons is a shame for them, but there's nothing they can do about it. They just have to reload and try to fix their depth scoring a little bit, try to get a little bit more of a push for those type of games, and eventually either hope that you don't run into the Penguins or that you can finally outlast them. They've been very close in each of these past two series. That game six last year that went to overtime could have gone either way. They had an opportunity to win that game early in the overtime. And then, of course, this game seven, they just the opportunity was there on the table and came up just short, couldn't really score. Braden Holtby needs to be a little bit better. I still think this team is very close, and I think that in the years to come, maybe you could see something like maybe what the Sharks did last year, where if they sneak into the playoffs and they're not a top-tier team and maybe they go to the other side of the bracket, they could finally get to the conference final. But I think when they continue to face these high expectations and continue to run into the Penguins, it's just amazing to see how well the Penguins are built for these moments and how even, you know, we've seen the Blackhawks put together a dynasty, but now it's starting to slip away. The Penguins are showing very little signs, and they're still going to be an elite team for the years to come with some of their young players coming up the past couple of years. So it's tough sledding, tougher than ever for the Capitals, and we're going to see how they can turn to their prospect pool and make some moves with the salary cap to try to give it another shot next year. It's been pretty, I'd have to imagine, pretty depressing down there right now.
Yeah, that definitely tough. And you talked about bringing in, utilizing some of their younger guys and bringing them into the mix, because you look at their cap situation, they're at about $50 million right now heading into next season. Orlov's an RFA, Burakovsky's an RFA, and Kuznetsov, the big payday, is an RFA. And then you've got the free agents on the unrestricted side, Alsner, Shattenkirk, Williams, Oshie, Winnick. From the UFA standpoint, do you see, or I guess the easier question, who do you see returning? Because it doesn't look like Shattenkirk might be that guy, and they've got a decision to make with the rest. Who do you see out of their five UFAs, Oshie, Winnick, Williams, Alsner, and Shattenkirk, being the most likely to return?
I mean, I think Oshie, there's a decent chance he'll come back, because he had a great year. It's just going to be a matter of him. I mean, he's a player that has been through the trenches through the years with the Blues and the Capitals, and has gone through playoff failures. I think he'll do the right thing when it comes down to it, and make, you know, not ask for too much from the Capitals with the greater good in his mind. He wants to get to that next step in his career. I could see him staying. I think Justin Williams will probably move on. Shattenkirk will almost definitely move on, probably somewhere in the East. But it's going to be fun to see how they can retool, and if they can, you know, take a player like Burakovsky or Jacob Vrana or some of their decent prospects and elevate them to the top six and try to get more out of them. I think when we saw Burakovsky excel in the later part of that series, when he was moved to the top line, that's a great sign for them moving forward, because he's shown signs over the past two seasons that he's capable of that next step. And, you know, to be honest, playing with Lars Eller and Tom Wilson is a difficult spot for a player like that, who has not taken a full step to produce at a high level against the Penguins, who have amazing depth scoring. So, yeah, I would look for potentially Oshie to come back, and then certainly the elevation of some of their younger forwards.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they maneuver not only the salary cap, but the roster in general. Brian McClellan is going to have a lot of work ahead of him, their general manager. Pete, really appreciate you taking the time to join us, and let's do this again.
Yeah, sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
Thanks. You too. That is Pete Jensen, the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com. And yeah, that cap situation, caps, not cap, but I mean, there could potentially be some turnover there, some interesting turnover. You know, like you were saying, Alsner's 28-year-old defenseman made $2.8 million this season, probably cash in a lot more significantly elsewhere. They got to figure out what's happening. Look, the expansion draft's going to be another thing for these guys. If I'm Vegas, I'm taking Grubauer,
sure,
as one of my goaltenders without hesitation. So it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of all unfolds for them. But it's time for a break, and when we come back, we're going to get things back on track with the game tonight, between Anaheim and Nashville. Josh Brewster will be joining us. He is the Ducks post-game radio host for Duck Calls. He'll be coming on right after the break. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sudden moves. You don't know the half of the abuse. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask. Welcome back to the program. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. I'm Dave. That's Dennis. It's time to chat about the game happening tonight, or this afternoon, depending on what part of the country you're in. The Anaheim Ducks facing off against the Nashville Predators. Game two of that one gets underway at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Joining us now to talk about the series and the Ducks, more specifically, our good pal Josh Brewster, Duck Calls for the Ducks postgame show. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. pretty good. And I guess let's just, you know, let's dive right into things here. Game two happening in a few hours. And where is kind of the minds, where are the levels of enthusiasm, excitement, seriousness, kind of how are things going in Anaheim right now with regards to the Ducks in preparation for this game?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, Andrew Cogliano said it best when he said it didn't feel like the West Final when the game began, probably due to the fact that I think there's a hell of a lot of people stuck in traffic. And there's also the fact that they had just played 36 or 40 hours before. It's no excuse. They played till overtime, so I think they can hang their hats on that. But I think they're probably a bit, you know, guarded in their optimism. I mean, they, you know, Nashville is tough, and Nashville took it to them in the first 10 minutes of that game perfectly. I mean, just, you know, that first period was just real rough for the Ducks. And so, you know, the Ducks should feel good about straightening things out. But they've got some issues. I mean, the power play is a major issue. And, you know, they're just going to have to come out of the gate fully engaged today and hope that they can just put game one behind them and know that maybe they were just caught a little flat-footed because of the quick turnaround.
It didn't really look like the bounces were going in their direction, you know, outside of the fact that scoring the first goal of the game in game one, they kind of, you know, sat back and forgot to kind of continue things a little bit as Nashville really turned on the Jets. But at the same time, it just throughout that game, it looked like things were just tilting more in Nashville's favor versus that of the Ducks in terms of how the puck, you know, going from tape to tape a little bit more, you know, from Nashville's perspective. I understand that they just played, you know, relatively recently, but could nerves have played a factor for this group after getting over that big hurdle, moving on past the Game 7, going back into the Western Conference Final, excuse me? Could that have played a bit of a factor for some of the guys on that team?
Yeah, I think it could have, and I think that, you know, just not, you know, just getting out-willed. I mean, look, let's talk about what Nashville brought. I mean, Nashville brought a certain hunger and will and determination, and, you know, that can't be tracked statistically, but that's pretty much what's at hand here. The statistics aren't going to help us a whole hell of a lot now. It's you're too deep in. Nashville came out. They were, you know, it's the winning one-on-one battles. As far as the Ducks go, you say, look, you know, the tape-to-tape passing wasn't there. Well, you know, when you're not the fastest club in this day and age of everybody playing fast, quote-unquote, you know, you've got to rule things like the passing game, which, of course, there's really not much statistical for that. So, yeah, the passing game, the puck possession, getting shots off quickly. You know, they were very indecisive with the puck, if you ask me. Randy likes it when they don't dust it off, when their shots are quick, and there's a lot of them. I think that's a key to success in the playoffs. So it's you have to impose your will in your game, and Nashville imposed its will. And that's it. I mean, if you come out and show that you're hungrier and the puck means more to you, that's what's going to win playoff games or at least get you that start that you're looking for. So then when the Ducks gather strength, you can weather the storm. I think that the Ducks need to really think about what they lost in Patrick Eves, quite honestly. I think that that's such a major subtraction because they needed Corey Perry to be better in the regular season. And they needed an extra guy to go to the net. And that's a big subtraction. And so between, you know, Cogliano and Richie and Kasha and Thompson and Vermette and any of these guys, someone's going to have to step into the breach more often and give them what they need down low. And in Game 7, you saw Cogliano and Richie rewarded. That's what's got to continue to happen, even if we set aside the star players.
You know, Dave, JB's bringing out the big guns tonight for Duck Calls. You're going to have Barry Melrose on with you tonight. Is that right, JB?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Very honored to have Barry on again.
And which outlet are you going to be on tonight?
Oh, tonight, yeah, AM 830. Whenever you hear the Ducks on AM 830, you will hear Duck Call. Sometimes we move to another station because of some Angels game, so the game will be on another station. You won't hear me, but you'll hear me anytime I'm on AM 830, so I'll be on tonight. Thank you for bringing that up.
JB, yeah, sure. Ryan Kessler's been really good defensively. Shut down Connor McDavid for the most part in game in first series against Edmonton. But JB, what's happened to his goal scoring? I mean, you talk about not getting Perry to contribute and Eves being out, but this guy hasn't scored probably since the first quarter of the year. What do you think is going on with him offensively?
You know, Dennis, that's a really good question. I simply don't know. I wish I had his shot totals and shots per game totals right in front of me at the moment. But that is a question that's been hanging in the air for a while. But as you mentioned, you know, his defense has been pretty stunning, quite honestly, especially in that second round. And, you know, I really don't know what it is. I'd love to see what his volume of shots are. But there's no question that actually I should have included him just now in the guys I mentioned because, you know, he does love to play in that low slot. And that's got to come. I would say you're absolutely correct to say that somehow, some way, he's got to step it up in that category too. Although, you know, we know his primary role. And in all frankness, Antoine Vermette gets a lot of credit for what he does in that face-off circle, and that's vital. Okay, but to me, you want a roster spot on my team? Scoreboard, put it on the scoreboard, and Antoine Vermette's got to finish as well. So. You know, the Ducks do have some issues in the depth ranks. And I said coming into the series on this channel, the Ducks' top six I like against Nashville a lot. The bottom six, I think Nashville gets the edge.
Mm-hmm. Is it just a matter of more energy, a better start for them? I mean, obviously you can't come into game two getting outshot 13-1 in the first 20 minutes, right? So is it just a matter of energy? What's the path to win to get them even in the series?
But execute Randy's game. Randy's game is go direct to the net and please don't dust the puck off. I like to see one-time shots. I like to see them quickly. Pass the puck, stay in possession of the puck, and get to the slot and be decisive. And the fact of the matter is, yes. And you know, talking to, like, Scott Niedermeyer, I think I asked him this when they were on the way to the Cup in 07. And I said, isn't this 80% of this is will at this point? You've got the four final clubs. Mm-hmm. Right. What is the statistics going to tell me? You know, like, for example, I always point out John Gibson. You got this goals against average, not so great. You know what? I don't care. Because if you can keep delivering big saves at the right time, nobody asked Grant Fuhr what his goals against average was because nobody cared and nobody should care. So you just saw him win and win. So I would say as far as the Ducks go, yes, it's will. Get your ass to the net and get shots. And execute what Randy wants. Randy wants a real simple game. So you got to come out and impose that rather than playing to turn the momentum your way and to have to work so hard to turn it your way. You know, Nashville came out and they wanted it more. And that sounds like a cliche, but we're too far along now to talk about to nitpick. You see it. It either passes the eye test or it doesn't.
You know, you brought up Randy Carlyle, JB, and it's a very different cat this time around. You want to your opinion, your thoughts, your observations on Randy Carlyle this time around the bench as opposed to last time, which he did win a cup for the Ducks, so let's not disrespect that. But just a more relaxed, more calm, just your thoughts. You've been with him all year about how it's been like to interact with Randy Carlyle.
Yeah, Randy is a lot. Let me say this. I think 92.8% of whatever Randy was is still there. But there's a key element where I think the guy's ears are open. I think he's learned about how he was being perceived in terms of handling younger players, okay? And I think that, you know, quite honestly, I think that there probably was enough drama in the locker room during his years in Anaheim and then going into his years in Toronto and what he learned there about, you know, younger players. I think over the years, you get older and wiser. This is a decade of a man's life. Get older and wiser. And then you see headlines in Toronto where it's always going to be intense scrutiny. You know, he can't coach anymore. The game has passed him by, blah, 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 blah. Now, this is all nonsense, of course, but those are the headlines.
But Toronto headlines notwithstanding, though.
That's right. I think that Randy looks at the situation as, you know, let me be a little more receptive to what the younger guys are saying. I don't know if when Bob Murray bought him back, maybe he talked to him about that. I don't know.
Sure.
But look, Randy's a hugely successful coach in my view. And, you know, it didn't work out in Toronto, but I do think that what the players have put forth is that his ears are open a lot more often and they can feel more free to talk. But, you know, what he wants really hasn't changed. What he wants out of a player hasn't changed.
He's Josh Brewster, host of Duck Calls, AM 830 tonight after Game 2 in Anaheim. His guest will be Barry Melrose, of all people. JB, longtime friend, thanks for coming on. Always appreciate the time.
It is absolutely my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
This is going to be like when you're evaluating other coaches, players, you have to take the Toronto element like quasi out of it, like only to an extent. Being the guy in Toronto, I get to see this all the time. I was here when Randy was here. You just leave that alone a little bit because, you know, as a general rule, the Toronto media, we tend to go a little overboard.
Really?
I mean, look, just as an if you don't know, now you know.
Now you know. I think it helped him. I think it's time Toronto helped him this time around. I really do.
The Grays came out a little quicker. But, yeah, I think it certainly would have done that for him. We'll take a break. We'll come back after a few minutes, talk more about the game tonight and some of the other hoopla going around the National Hockey League. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Got you here to close out the first hour of the Fourth Period Live. NHL Network Radio. That's Dennis in LA. I'm Dave in Toronto. Ducks Preds coming in at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. It's going to be a good one. It is going to be a look. This last situation that's happening here for these teams. This is, you know, effectively the final frontier for two teams in these playoffs, either the Ottawa Senators, the Pittsburgh Penguins, or the Preds and the Ducks. I didn't anticipate both of these series going 1-0 the way that they did. So, game two, getting going tonight, Anaheim and Nashville. We're going to continue in the second hour talking more about this series. Our good man Jim Fox will be joining us. He is the color commentator for the LA Kings. He is covering the series as well, doing some of the broadcast side of things, covering that series between the Ducks and Preds. And then we'll also talk to Lindsay Raleigh. She is the ringside reporter for Fox Sports in Nashville. She's also doing the postgame show for them as well. So we will discuss that with them and get the Nashville perspective as well, because this is one of the things that I've noticed over the course of these playoffs. The ratings, the local ratings, have been pretty darn significant in Nashville. Like these are very big numbers that we're starting to see from a local perspective. And I was in Nashville last year for All-Star Weekend. Fell in love with what's going on now. The outside, and everybody listening, okay, yeah, sure, you walked down Broadway, you had a great time. Outside of that, outside of the festivities that are in Nashville around Bridgestone Arena, there is the atmosphere in Nashville, and I know it was All-Star Weekend, and everybody chirps All-Star Weekend, and everyone who does chirp All-Star Weekend just means to me that you've never been to an All-Star Weekend before, because it's a ridiculous amount of fun. But the atmosphere that was going on in Nashville was phenomenal. So we're going to talk to Lindsay. I want to get a sense of how things are going now in these playoffs. Now that we're in the conference final, the Western Conference final, getting a sense of what's happening there and how the city continues to embrace the Preds. It is one of those markets that doesn't get the necessary recognition it deserves, really, when it comes to the National Hockey League. So kudos on them. And kudos on the team. They're doing tremendous. We'll see how things get going for them in game two tonight. We'll chat more about that one coming up after the break to close things out. That's Dennis. I'm Dave. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Hour two of the program. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. That's Dennis in LA. I'm Dave here in Toronto, SiriusXM Studios. Jam-packed. First hour just flew, DB.
You like that Metallica selection, don't you?
There you go. Changing it up a little bit. Yeah, we had Chance the Rapper earlier, a little Metallica action now. The mayor must be loving this.
Oh, yeah. I do.
Yeah.
Switch it up, baby.
There you go.
And it was a fast hour. It was a great hour. Let's make the second hour great again.
We'll do our best. For those going to the game tonight, for whether you're a Preds fan, a Ducks fan, or an NHL fan, and you're in Orange County, you may want to leave a little early for the game. And this isn't a hit based on the attendance last game. The Honda Center just sent out a tweet, an alert, which reads, with the Angels playing an early game across the street, traffic will be heavy around Honda Center. Leave early for tonight's game. So there's your PSA. If you're going to the game tonight, you're going to want to leave a little earlier than you normally would for a Sunday afternoon, late afternoon game in Anaheim. So you've been warned. Get to the game early. Show off your colors. Prevent everyone from chirping away, because a lot of people don't understand how the situation works down in Anaheim. Yeah,
but can I say one thing about that? And I'm not going to – this is not a referendum on the Ducks fans. But when you start the game and the arena is half full, like that's a talking point. It doesn't mean they're bad fans. But it's something where it rarely happens. And it was – I was there, David. It was half full. And it doesn't mean Duck fans are bad or they don't care or not buying tickets or whatever, because when they tie the game at two, it was very, very loud. But – when there's that few people in the seats at the start of a game, like that has to be reported, right? Now people start getting showing like sig alerts, and one moron put up the traffic like sig alert, and I'm like, well, most of it was Los Angeles, and if you know anything about the Duck fans, that there's very few Duck fans in Los Angeles, Dave, so they're not driving from like Encino or Santa Monica to the game. So yes, there was an accident and stuff like that, but when the optics are that poor. Like, it's your duty, it's our duty as the media to report that, saying, hey, you know, the building's half full at the start of the game. Doesn't mean you're bad fans. And look, game seven, they were great, but that was the fact. And yes, I agree with you, Dave. It's about the scheduling. Like, 6 o'clock on a – I can't wait if they make the cup final, what's going to happen when they're playing 5 o'clock games on Thursday nights.
Exactly, because all the games for the Stanley Cup final are 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific. Right? Same thing happened when Los Angeles was in there for you know, 12 and 14. Same situation. So yeah, so just a little PSA situation here. Honda Center tweeting out, the Angels are playing an early game across the street. You're going to want to leave early for the game tonight. So hopefully
you
Foxy.
You want to leave early anyway. Get the atmosphere.
Exactly. You want to be.
Beer. Let's go.
That's
buy
right.
Some more T-shirts in the team room, in the team store.
There you go. I think they still got Penner shirts out there.
Hopefully.
A lot of guys.
We need to get Penner on, Dave, you know?
We should. Should get Dustin up.
A little bit more Southern California flavor, but our next guest will give us some Southern California flavor.
Absolutely. He understands the marketplace very well across the board down in SoCal. Jim Fox joining us here on the program. How you doing, Foxy?
Doing good, guys. Thank you.
You got that alert? You got to leave early for the games thing?
I did not, but I will now take a look at it for sure.
There you go.
I'm trying to get there early anyway, but we're there well in time to be ready, so.
There you go. So tell us about the series. You're now, of course, you know, with the LA Kings covering the Kings color commentator there, doing a fantastic job consistently, one of the best in the business. You've been now taking a look and taking the reins here for the Ducks and Preds series. How have you evaluated the first, 60-plus minutes in that one from an obviously non-biased perspective, but from both Ducks and Preds? What were some of the key points that you saw from both perspectives that led to ultimately what was a 1-0 series lead for Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, you hear it all the time. Teams would say, you know, we have to play our game.
Right.
Well, I think in the first game, the Predators were able to play their game for a longer period of time and for longer stretches than the Ducks were. I think there's some probably obvious reasons for that. Again, coming off of Game 7, the emotional high, the physical issue, jumping right into another series, and Nashville had a little bit more time to kind of settle down and look forward and prepare for the Ducks. But the way it happened was not a surprise. I think when Anaheim had their game going, it's when they were a little bit more physical. And when Nashville had their game going, it was when their defense were leading the attack and entering the zone. And it happened quite a bit. Even, again, early when the Ducks took a 1-0 lead, Nashville was getting penetration into the offensive zone. And most of that was because of not a 3-man attack. It was a 4-man and a 5-man attack at times. So that's what both teams are doing. You're struggling to find your game. And in game one, it was Nashville. And I know the score goes to overtime, all that. I think if you're a coach and you're analyzing the game, Peter Laviolette would say, let's not change too much. And Randy Carlisle would say, well, we're probably going to make a few adjustments here.
So, Foxy, Nashville's now 9-2 in the postseason. So I'm going to draw a parallel to the team that you bore witness to 5 years ago. That came really out of nowhere. There was an 8 seed, played okay down the stretch. But Nashville won half their games this year. And then they've gone on this great run. They swept the Blackhawks, which no one saw coming. Foxy, how does that happen? How does a team go from mediocre play, and even down the stretch they were mediocre, to turning it on, you know, beating the heavy favorite and now winning a second series against a team, St. Louis, that was probably had one of the best records in the league going down the stretch and now taking the lead against Anaheim? Is there a switch, Fox? Do they turn it on? What's happened here with this team?
Yeah, I'm going to just kind of, I guess, repeat what Peter Laviolette said before the series started, in that he felt in the last third of the season, and I know you guys are going to love this, but when they looked deeper into the numbers, into the analytics, they felt they were playing very well. Now, they weren't necessarily getting the results. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, covering the Kings, I see that all the time, too, that, you know, the fancy stats and new analytics numbers, they're great. And yet the results weren't there. But Laviolette felt his team was doing it and executing. And when they went deeper into the numbers, they all looked good. So he felt they were pretty confident that they were playing, you know, the right way, as coaches say all the time.
Right.
Now, at the end of the night, many of those nights, they didn't get the win. But they would go back and say, again, what does the coach do? You go back, what do we need to change? And Laviolette was saying to himself, well, you know what? We really don't have to change much. We just have to get a goal here, a goal there, those types of things, and it works that way. I think there's no question. And I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. It's so obvious with Nashville. I mean, that the top four on D just set the tone for everything. And, you know, Subban, the way he's playing, and you know, there's talk about Subban's defensive game, and I think that's a mistake. Meaning, when he was questioned before in Montreal, it wasn't his defensive game. It was his decisions with the puck. It was turnovers.
Right. Yep.
He was trying to do too much. It wasn't that he was bad defensively. It was that he put his team in a bad position many times because, you know, that hope play he would try. Oh, I hope it gets through. And if it does, it's going to be a breakaway pass. That's the adjustment he had to make to his game. Defensively, you know, his footwork, his foot speed, I mean, he can keep up. He's a big guy. He's a physical guy. He does it that way. So he fits in. And again, it's only one game in. But Nashville, again, and it's back to that first question, they're just able to have those four guys really take the lead back on the blue line. And again, I think they felt during the season, even Laviolette said before the Chicago series, you know, and maybe he can say it now, but he was very confident in his group because of past results against Chicago and because of those numbers, the numbers that we can get into, and you can really go deep. And, you know, sometimes it's how certain coaches take those numbers. Everyone has the same numbers. Everyone has the same fancy stats, but it's where you put your priority. And it seems like Laviolette has found that now. And when you find that, you go to that trend, you go to your players and say, this is what's working, and let's keep doing it.
You know, when you go back 5-6 years, you always had an elite dominant center winning a cup for the Chicago, had Taves, Crosby in Pittsburgh, Kopitar here in L.A. Johansson's played very well. Has he been dominant? Maybe not, but probably a point-of-game player. But can they get away with that? Mike Fisher has now played, 12 games and hasn't scored a point, right? The third line center, Yonkrook, I think one goal, one assist through the playoffs. Can they get away with, in essence, being a one-line team, Jim, and win four series?
I'll start the answer by saying this. I think one of the most impressive players in game one was Johansson.
Agreed.
You know, he's got kind of a checkered past, right? You know, he came into the league as a star, then he became a stud. I mean, he was a horse. And then, you know, contract issues and you know, a relationship with John Tortorella, and then his game kind of slides, and then there was people wondering, is he a good teammate? You know, is he the type of guy you want on your team? Went to Nashville, kind of struggled early, didn't really fit in. Now he's fitting in. And as physical as the Anaheim centerman can be, I was just talking about Nashville's defense corps, Anaheim center position, they're as strong as anyone in the league.
Yes.
When you go down, you know, when Thompson's your fourth line center, you've got a pretty good core.
Yeah.
And they all have their roles. And I thought Johansson, you know, they went at him. They went at Arvidsson. And Johansson was strong. And Forsberg was too. You know, I know they didn't light it up offensively, but I thought they played a strong game. Can they get by with just that? Oof. I mean, that's where Rene's numbers are going to have to continue to be, you know, 95 save percentage. It's going to have to be that way. We'll see. You know, you got to get their defense provide the numbers. So it's a different model. So, you know, and you can go through the numbers there. How many teams have the point production from their blue line that Nashville has? So they don't get it up front, but they get it way more on the blue line compared to other teams. And that's how they're going to get it done. So can they win? Yes. If they do, though, again, their defense are going to have to continue putting up the points because, as you guys were touching on, you know, the guys, you know, Fisher and Yarncourt, they're not as consistent.
One guy who's been maligned for a mediocre year and then he's been up and down in the playoffs is Corey Perry. Jim, I mean, you've seen him being in SoCal. You see more proportionally more games than any analyst would probably. Is it the speed factor? Is it he's not playing the same way he did when he was a dominant MVP candidate or when he won the Hart Trophy? What do you see in this play? Do you see any appreciable difference, or is it just bad breaks, bad bounces, or perhaps just a bad season for him?
If I were to, you know, break it down, it's he hasn't changed. The league has changed around him. And we know we've seen a change. I think we can go as far back to coming out of the lockout where they changed the rules. And it opened up the game a little bit. And, you know, now I'm sorry, that's what, 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah. But
I think we're now seeing, like, third period leads in playoffs used to be automatic, right?
That's it, right?
Automatic.
Lock them.
Not anymore. I mean, you're seeing two-goal, three-goal comebacks, and that's not unusual anymore. So I'm bringing it back to Corey Perry. I think the league has gotten – Corey's never been the great skater. He does it because he's just got big, you know what. And that's what he does. He goes to the net. He gets hacked. He gets whacked. He's got a great set of hands. And if the puck's there, he's there. It's going to go in. But maybe the game has shifted around him to the point where his production is not going to be there. Now, having said that, right, guys, he's got two goals. He's got two game-winning goals, overtime goals. So, you know, you take those. When the game's on the line, you probably want him in front of the net, the other team's net. That's what you want. He's going to be the guy that's going to sniff out a loose puck and put it home. But the tempo of games now, I think, has changed. And again, I think it goes back. It's taken 10 to 12 years to get where the league is right now, but now it's a pretty fast game. You know, decisions have to be made quickly. I'm not sure if Corey can, you know, beat guys with speed wide and protect the puck like he once did. You know, the other team's defensemen now are less physical but more mobile. And that mobility may be the change in the game that if there has been a drop-off, and there has been in production for him, I would say that's the reason. Not him dropping off, but the league getting faster around him.
Has that, Boxy, has that also changed the mentality of how the Ducks have been using Ryan Kesler in these playoffs? I mean, he's got, you know, 7 points, a goal, 6 assists, and he had a pretty solid offensive year. But we haven't seen him in the bigger offensive situations for the Ducks as we've seen some of their other players, because he's been utilized more on that shutdown role in trying to, you know, effectively take care of the team's top unit and their top opposition. So is that kind of where we're seeing with regards to the adjustments made from Kessler's perspective, being more focused on the physical defensive end versus the offensive side of things for Anaheim?
You know, I think Anaheim, and I think it's a trait of Randy Carlyle, their head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're more of a throwback than most teams. And every coach does it. You know, you look for the matchup. You look for the matchup you need that you feel is going to give you the advantage. I think Randy does that more than anyone. And so I think Anaheim now has kind of fallen into, which they want to do, where Kesler is that old style checking centerman. You really don't see that much anymore.
Right.
I mean, what do you see now? You see like kind of four lines, right? And more balance. It's kind of old school, I think. And that's why if the playoffs come around, he knows, his teammates knows, the coaching staff knows, because they've talked to him. They've assigned him that role. And I think you see it less and less compared to the, 10 years ago where it was two offensive lines, shutdown line, energy line. You don't see that anymore. With Anaheim, you do. So they're kind of an anomaly there. They're a little bit different because they're probably a little bit more throwback than most, the way they approach and the way they set things up. So I know one thing. I don't think any people are upset or disappointed with the way Kessler's playing. I think he gives them exactly what they want, and that's to be that, to play against, and he is that.
He'll be bringing that again tonight as this game gets underway at 7:30 Eastern, a game that we'll have here on NHL Network Radio, and you'll be able to hear Jim Fox and Dave Gosher's national call here on the station on Sirius XM 91. Foxy, really appreciate taking the time to join us, and we'll be listening to you tonight.
Hey, guys, my pleasure. Always a pleasure. I appreciate it. I'll see you guys.
That is Jim Fox, and again, you'll be catching him and Dave Gosher's national call here on NHL Network Radio, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, DB. And yeah, he makes a good point, because with regards to the kind of quasi, I guess the kind of the anomaly that is the Ducks right now in terms of their playing style, but they've done a good job in meshing the speed of the game with the physicality that they bring. You have the shutdown guys, you have guys that can adjust their roles a little bit more, be more defensive, more physical in that of Ryan Kessler, because he has the capabilities of doing that against the team's top unit. If you remove his offensive capabilities, what is brought forward to the table? And you've got guys like Rickard Rakell, Jakob Silfverberg, that bring more speed to the equation and that kind of offset things a little bit. Obviously, you've got Cogliano and Nick Ritchie into the mix. But for the most part, it's a well-balanced attack. And maybe this is a way that some teams are going to be looking at this that still have that physical, big guy mentality. You add a couple offensive speedsters into the mix, and you can still get away with playing that style.
And, to Jim's point about their defense, Kevin Bieksa is ready to go, but I think his lack of foot speed is going to keep him out of the lineup. So you got Brandon Montour, you've got Shea Theodore, you've got Cam Fowler, you've got Sammy Vatanen. I mean, all really good skaters, and that's it. That's the mobility of the – and Jim's right. I think that the one big change in this game and what we're seeing now is mobility on the blue line. And I don't think Randy's going to trade off the experience of Kevin Bieksa for the mobility of Vatanen or even one of the rookies, even Theodore Montour. I think he's comfortable with those two guys on the playing the third pair, he'll go with it. But, yeah, I agree with you. And I think they have enough speed up front. Look, Getzlaff is not by no means a speed burner, but he's that dominant center on the first line. And then you've got, like you said, more of a classic lineup up front for the Ducks.
Yeah, and when you've got a rejuvenated, I guess, Ryan Getzlaff in terms of his motivation factor. I mean, this has been
he's been great.
Yeah, this has been a different playoff for him.
Conn Smythe level, Dave.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. We'll talk more about this series a little bit more on Nashville's perspective with Lindsay Raleigh of Fox Sports in Tennessee. She'll be coming up right after the break. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. That's Dennis. I'm Dave. Back at you here on the program. It is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. I'm Dave Pignota here in Toronto. Mr. Dennis Bernstein in Los Angeles, of course.
Mister.
No? You didn't like that one?
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. So, we were just touching on that. We're going to get to the Preds again in about a minute or so. But I just wanted to reemphasize the Ryan Yeah, Getzlaff factor. And how he's I mean, game one, I didn't see too – I mean, outside of him throwing the body around and trying to get the team, you know, going and rejuvenated a little bit more after, you know, forgetting to shoot the puck after scoring the first goal, this guy's playoffs has been absolutely phenomenal. And it's a different mindset from Anaheim's perspective when you've got your captain and arguably your best player playing like – this versus how he's performed the last couple of years in the postseason. For whatever the reason, maybe he was banged up more, whatever it was, it seems like he's turned on a different gear and the switch kind of went from, all right, enough of this BS, let's get this going. And it's really altered the production of Anaheim's offensive game. More so than, you know, what we've seen. Allowing guys like Kessler to be more on the defensive side of things, allowing, you know, the excuse that Corey Perry's not playing up to snub necessarily, but as Foxy said before the break, two game-winning goals so far in these playoffs, 7 assists, you give him a bit of a bye from that perspective because you've got Getzlaff doing his thing, Silverberg with, you know, 12 points in as many games, Raquel contributing and going from there. So they're spreading things out. They're playing a different style, but it seems like they've mashed and mixed and mashed what they've got to kind of the right recipe so far. But at the same time, something that Nashville has, combat, at least in the first game.
Well, I think if they go on to win the cup, he's the Conn Smythe winner. I think without a doubt. And I think from his standpoint, you know, he stood and talked with us a long time after Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's the one guy that probably learned the most from the adversity of losing 4 straight Game 7s in 4 consecutive seasons. He's learned from that. He grew from that. You know, and I'll go back to that Game 7. They gave up an own goal early in the game. And another Dex team, you know, probably, you know, their heads drop, their shoulders shrug. They probably give up a couple more goals in that first period and go and lose that game. But they came back, they bounced back, and you know, Dave, that was their best performance. They have to replicate Game 7's performance today. That was clearly their best effort of the play. You know, Edmonton, for all the great offense they put together in that series, they got nothing in that Game 7. So that's what the Ducks need to do. And I think it starts and ends with Ryan Getzlaff. He's clearly their best player at this point in time, and certainly a Conn Smythe contender at this point.
That game getting underway tonight at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. You'll hear that game here on the channel on Sirius XM 91. Shifting things from Nashville's perspective now, Lindsay Raleigh joining us here on the program. She's a ringside reporter and post-game host here of the playoffs on Fox Sports. Lindsay, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. How you doing?
We're doing pretty good.
Good.
I mean, you know, Toronto, LA, there's no hockey being played right now, but we're watching, we're keeping tabs on everything. And one of the things that I noticed from Nashville's side of things has how much the fan base has been absolutely ridiculous and all over this team throughout these playoffs. Now that this is, you know, Western Conference final territory for the first time in franchise history, where is the mindset? How is the atmosphere like and has been for game one and in preparation for game two tonight?
You know, every interview I do and whenever, you know, I'm talking to NHL Network or any radio show, that's the first question that's asked. And I almost give the same answer every time, that it's almost indescribable. It's really nothing short of incredible to see this city and the way it rallies. You know, a perfect example is when the Preds did win game 6 and I was leaving the arena. And I mean, the whole city is swamped. You know, the streets are filled with just gold everywhere. And you can't go a block without seeing a restaurant or a business that has a huge Stand With Us flag. I went out to dinner after that game and was just in a regular restaurant, not in a bar. And a Let's Go Preds chant just broke out in the middle of the restaurant. I mean, it's amazing to see the way that this city has really rallied around this team and the effect that it makes, you know, not even just after or before games, but during games in Bridgestone Arena. You know, I've been in every arena in the league, and I've never seen anything like it, where every TV timeout, every single fan in the arena is on their feet cheering. I remember speaking with Craig Smith about it last round and him saying, you know, it's like that during regular season, but in the playoffs, it's a whole new level. And he said, he almost gets lost in it when he's out on the ice. He's over on the bench and like taking in the atmosphere of the fans going nuts during these TV timeouts, not because anybody scored a goal or there's been anything amazing that's happened, just because they're cheering on the team and showing their support. He said sometimes he'll be like, oh, shoot, I got to get out there, because he just kind of gets caught up in it. It's really amazing to see.
Oh, Laviolette must love that.
Oh, yeah. He every chance he gets in post-game interviews when I'm with him, he just says, we can't thank our fans enough. We can't describe how much that affects our game. And that's part of the reason why we're playing so well at home right now, is because of the fan base.
Yeah, and it's really an added motivator for the team. And obviously, game two, just like game one, in Anaheim tonight. But then things shift gears and move to Bridgestone later on in the week. And we're going to see exactly, from a Western Conference final perspective, how much more intense and intimidating the crowd can be, and how much of an extra motivator that is for this team. And it's funny, because we've seen this team play throughout the season, and this is the way that they've performed in these playoffs was kind of how everyone anticipated this group to get going, kind of out of the gate in October. And we're seeing that happening now. We're seeing players like Ryan Ellis has been phenomenal throughout the season, but this is on a national scale been a bit of a coming out party for him. Ryan Johansson, as the last few games going back into the last round have progressed, he's starting to take the reins a lot more. Forsberg has been great in the defensive core overall with Josi and Subban. This is a very well-rounded group and a very deep team. What do you think has been the reason for them just kicking it into high gear at this point of the season, when so many people expected them to be one of the more dominating teams early on in the season?
Like you said, it's been very balanced contributions. And I remember going into the postseason, that was the number one thing, hearing from the players, hearing from, from the coaching staff, saying, it's not going to be one person. It's going to have to be a team effort. If we're going to win the cup, it's going to have to be everybody doing their job. Defense on both ends of the ice, Pecorine, our forward stepping up, just from every angle, everybody basically just doing their job. And one of the things you asked, why everybody's gelling, there was some changes in personnel in this season and things like that. And I think a lot of it was just everybody kind of getting into a groove. And, Coach Laviolette has said it several times. All that matters is that we're at our best come postseason. Granted that we get into the postseason, but when that happens, actually playing our best hockey. And that's actually just the way that it has worked out. I remember speaking with Roman Josi throughout that first series against Chicago, and he said, there were times during the season where maybe they felt like they weren't on the same page as far as the system goes and things like that. And now he said that there's not even an ounce of that in the postseason. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody knows what the goal is. And most important, he said, they're just having fun. And that's something you can really sense when you're around this group, is that they really are just almost like a family. And they're friends, and they have fun together when they're winning and getting the job done and things like that. Nobody likes to lose. But when they lose, it's one of those things like, okay, just lost a game. That's all right. Let's move on to the next one. No one's dwelling on it. No one's beating themselves up, because these guys are all super competitive. Yes. But also looking forward to, okay, what do we need to do for the next game to get a win? So, to sum it up, it's amazing to see these guys really come together here in the postseason. And this is, the best we've seen this team play all year long. And, no better time.
No.
So, Lindsay, you mentioned Rene, you mentioned Johansson, you mentioned Josi, Ellis. The one guy you haven't mentioned is the highest profile player maybe in the league, who came in from this mega trade that happened in the offseason.
Well, I know what's coming.
Just talk about the year, the season, you've spent with PK, and how he's acclimated to this. Because he came in, he went to Tootsie's, the whole thing. He did it perfectly. If a player's ever set up to do PR for himself, it's PK Subban. But just talk about the whole season with him, and now part of an integral part of the team, but certainly not the best player on the team right now, and just how it was to deal with him throughout the season, how the fans have embraced him, and the relationship between maybe the media, PK, and the fans in general.
Well, not only the city, but the team, the coaching staff, everyone really welcomed PK with open arms. And, I got to work with him all year. He's a great guy to work with. He's a great player on the ice, but off the ice, like you said, he really sets that example for how to handle yourself as far as the media goes and getting a city to really rally around you. And it's really awesome to see. And he has said several times that he loves this team. He, you know, not only that, but he loves Nashville. And he's really fit in well, not only with the city, of course. You know, this is the kind of city that's perfect for PK. But not only that, but he fits well in LaViolette's system. And that's one of the things that he said he loved about coming here was being able to play in that system. You know, being able to have the green light to jump into the rush as much as he can and things like that. So PK throughout the year has been doing a great job. You know, he suffered an injury, and he's that guy when the guys had a break, he was the guy who was working on his skating. You know, he didn't go on vacation. He stayed and he worked hard to try and get back. And I think that that break really showed, and he really had some improvements after that, especially as far as getting back into a groove. I think Coach LaViolette said it well after that injury. You know, PK was trying to catch a moving train. And so I think he has done a good job of coming and doing his job. And I think that there's more to come from him. I think that we haven't seen the best out of him in the playoffs, as you said. But I have no doubt that he's going to show that side of him. But that just goes to show what kind of team that we have. That PK is this amazing player, but every guy on the team is really stepping up. So it's not necessarily that the Predators have to rely on one player and say, hey, you have to step up. We need you, because everybody's really doing their job right now. They don't need one player to step up and be this amazing player, because as you said, everybody, there seems to be contributions coming from guys like Cody McLeod, Vern Fiddler. Those guys got on the board last round that, you know, aren't necessarily known for their scoring. But like I said, that's what it's going to take to win the cup, are guys like that stepping up.
Okay, so let's go from the most gregarious personality on the organization to Mr. Death Stare, Peter LaViolette. And Pete's a great look. He won in Carolina. He's been fantastic a couple of different places. He took Philly to the cup final. He's trying to replicate it here in Nashville. But not the easiest guy in the world to get along with. How's it been covering Pete all year?
You know, I love it. I've loved, you know, Coach LaViolette does such an amazing job. And, you know, him and I came in the same year. So even from day one, as far as, you know, I work with him as far as interviews go, one-on-one for every single game throughout the whole season, at home, on the road. And he's never once not made me feel welcome. He's always made me feel like I'm a part of the family. I'm a part of the team, you know, whether we're on the plane or, you know, whether we're doing interviews or whatever it is. He's always been so amazing to me. And as you said, he has had success in the past. He won a cup in Carolina. I remember speaking with him earlier this year when we were in Carolina and him saying, you know, the difference about the year that they won the cup in Carolina is about November-ish. There started to be a feel, something you could sense in the room, on the ice, something like we're going in the right direction. You know, we could actually get this done. We might be able to win a cup. This might be the year for us. And it's really funny because ever since he told me that, I started to pay attention to the room and the feel and everything and notice it from in my opinion, in the Predators room, that ever since that center middle of the year, from then on, that feeling started to grow, that confidence in the room that, hey, maybe we could do this. Maybe we could do this. And that confidence just kind of shot through the roof once the playoffs started. And then, you know, you start out sweeping Chicago. There's no better start to have in the postseason. So it's been amazing to hear him talk about that feeling that he had in Carolina that year, and then sort of be able to see that feeling come to life with the Predators. Now, I'm not sitting here saying they're going to win the cup. I have no idea. But that same feeling and that confidence, I'm right, seeing it personally from my standpoint in the Predators room. And that's a reflection of Peter LaViolette.
It really is, and it starts really at that point, and that kind of spews throughout the rest of the team and the rest of the roster, regardless of the players you have, whether you have a player like PK Subban and his personality on the team, or, you know, somebody that can, you know, take in the reins a little bit like the captain Mike Fisher. When you've got the coach doing his thing, and from that perspective, it really translates to the rest of the group, and it certainly helps when a guy like Pekka Rinne is, you know, very calm, cool, and collected between the pipes and still putting up the numbers, the ridiculous numbers that he has throughout these playoffs. But one of the guys I wanted to speak with before we let you go, just adjusting his game a little bit, remotivating himself a little bit more with the game winner, and that's, you know, James Neal. And we talked about the offense and how this team is doing it by committee, but to see a guy like James Neal, who's been there for multiple years, who's truly embraced playing in Nashville, to see a player of that caliber you know, popping in a game winner and contributing more offensively. How does that help not only his game, but allow now the Preds to further spread out the offense a little bit more, knowing that he's, you know, a newly remotivated kind of player with that offensive flair that he's got?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That was a big moment for not only James, but for the club, you know, for the offense in general, to see James Neal, a guy who, you know, he's a goal scorer. There's no question about it. But, you know, I feel James has been doing his job a lot throughout this postseason, and whether, you know, he's creating chances and maybe he hasn't gotten, you know, the puck to drop every single time. But as far as that, he's also been in the St. Louis series, and I noticed it in game one against Anaheim, he's playing that physical game, that big body game that the Predators need him to play. So it was awesome to see him not only doing his job and doing the right things, but then be able to get rewarded for it. And in that overtime, I was watching it with Terry Crisp, and we were watching him, and he was doing everything right. He was pressing, you know, everything on the forecheck, everything he could have done to put himself in the right position. And we were sitting there and saying, if anybody's going to do this right now, it looks like it's going to be James Neal. So when he lit that lamp, it was a really amazing moment, I think, for not only just James Neal personally, but for the team. To be able to see a goal scorer like that step up in overtime, you know, that's the guy that you need to step up in that moment. We talk about score. You just talked about scoring by committee, and that's great, and we need everybody on the team to step up and do their job. But being a goal scorer like James Neal, that is the guy that needs to be stepping up in those moments. So for him to be able to do that, we talked about confidence. I think that that's just going to take the confidence of not only James Neal, but maybe the coaching staff's confidence in James Neal and the team's confidence in their goal scorers to a new level here moving forward against Anaheim.
Game two gets underway tonight, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. You can hear it here on the channel. You can watch it certainly on the tube as well. Nashville with a 1-0 lead. They'll be looking to extend that in Anaheim at the Honda Center tonight. Lindsay, really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
No problem. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. That is Lindsay Rawley. She is the ringside reporter and postgame host for Fox Sports Tennessee. And this is, again, I just think back, DB, to the beginning of the season when everyone anticipated this team being able to play with this type of confidence, with this type of depth, with this type of borderline dominance at certain points of the season. I know a lot of it falls on Pecorino for playing as outstanding as he has throughout these playoffs, but the rest of the roster, you would have thought had that depth throughout the course of the season. They squeeze into the playoffs, they get in there, and now they've just been absolutely on fire. And this is what everyone really anticipated, this team to be producing and how to be producing on a consistent basis.
I think if I went back and checked my, because I always picked this cup winner. I think I've picked it 13 years in a row incorrectly, Dave. But I think that I picked Nashville to go to the cup final. I think it was Tampa. I think I picked Tampa over Nashville. But, yeah, they look, I'll go back to the coach. The coach has been fantastic. He's won before. He's doing great things with this team, which, you know, it's pretty good. I mean, their defense is great, but Pete's done a great job. So kudos to him and to the team for playing the right way, as Jim Fox had mentioned earlier in the hour.
You, Sean Hutchin, Patrick Kearns, and Hannah Spreaker all picking the Nashville Predators the beginning of the season to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. So we'll see how things kind of go from there. We'll talk more about this. I didn't name myself because I picked Dallas, and that was bad. But we'll see. Them's the breaks. We're going to take one of those right now. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Back at you. It is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Ducks Preds game two underway at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. You'll hear that on the channel tomorrow. Game two between Ottawa and Pittsburgh, 8 o'clock Eastern. The midweek games now moving forward, regardless for either series, 8 o'clock Eastern is the start time for that one. And then weekends, everything changes. But at least everyone knows now. 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific, across the board, starting Monday for the two conference final series. Now, with that.
No Derek Jeter retirement ceremony talk?
No, this is the NHL Network radio. Dennis, I know like the Yankee thing.
Okay.
I know
the sports icon.
He is. He is. He can't even buy a team properly. Like, you know, if you're going to start throwing out the Yankee chirps and stuff like that on the program.
You gotta, I figured I'd bring that up because you don't want to talk about the local team.
Well, the Toronto team, no longer last place. So happy about that. Blue Jays getting their thing together. But that's baseball, which I thoroughly enjoy. But I love hockey that much more. And we've got, you know, the Western Conference Final tonight, Game 2, Eastern Conference Final tomorrow, and a lot of activity happening in the National Hockey League over the last little while. Now, we talked a little bit, DB, about Washington earlier on in the show with Pete Jensen.
Yeah.
And some of the moves that need to be made there or could potentially happen there. We've seen some other commentary now happening in Edmonton with one player, in, you know, more specifically than others, Jordan Eberle. And $6 million on the season as his cap hit. Leon Draisaitl is an RFA. Connor McDavid's got a year left on his deal. They're not going to have enough money to keep all these guys. And it seems now, and we reported this during the season, that Jordan Eberle, even though talks didn't get overly serious, but he was very much available on the trade market. You think this is the time now
right,
to move him? Is this it for Jordan Eberle in Edmonton?
Did you watch their series against the Ducks?
Yes, I did.
Hey, Dave, I would think about exposing him to the expansion draft.
It's a definite possibility. I mean, you know, looking at the team, and this was the thing. This was, you know, Brandon Davidson before he got traded to the Montreal Canadiens. That was the mindset that, from the Oilers' perspective, that he could be the guy that becomes exposed. But, you know, looking at things now, I mean, look, okay, first of all, if he is available, is he, from Vegas's perspective, are you going after him? Let's just straightforward that. Is he a guy you're going to pick?
George McPhee, offense, entertainment. Yeah, I'm going to pick Jordan. I'm going to pick Jordan Eberle. They signed the Russian kid to play center. Yeah, I would definitely pick Jordan Eberle. I think that's the type of player you want. You want some excitement. You want some skill. $6 million is, you know, is prohibitive given the production he's had, and you could see he's not functioning in the playoffs, even with a team that's a high tempo offense team. But I would certainly, if he was there to pick, you're not going to get a more skilled player, Dave, in the expansion draft than Jordan Eberle. Now, can you trade him? Yeah, for a team that maybe, you know, he's not a third line center like he's a third line wing like he's been in Edmonton, so he's probably your second line guy. But, you know, $6 million a year, Dave, for a second line winger is not probably the price you want to pay. I mean, look, if Oshie goes to pre-free agency, he's 33 goal scorer, he's getting $6 million.
Yep,
you got to pay
true. This
kid $6 million. He was paid as a first line right winger, and he's not. So that's the challenge. That's the issue. If you trade him, you may have to retain $1 million or so because he's not a first line right winger in this league, and he's getting paid by one. So that's the big challenge with respect to if you want to make a deal for Jordan Eberle.
Could we see something? Because we're starting to hear more chatter about teams talking to Eberle. Teams talking to Vegas and George McPhee and saying, hey, yep, if this guy's available on this team, why don't you pick him and we'll trade for him? That's starting to happen more. We're starting to hear that come out more where this is something that's being discussed. So maybe this is a possibility for another team that's had interest in Jordan Eberle, whether it's the Boston Bruins or, you know, the Canadiens, the Flyers. There's been some talk, Carolina. Perhaps one of those teams knocks on George McPhee's door and says, hey, how about you go after Eberle and we'll give you this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see that scenario possibly playing out?
Yeah, it's a function of who else on the Edmonton roster would be available and would make sense for Vegas. If there isn't a player that doesn't make sense for them, as a second choice, then absolutely. And Dave, I think this is going to be fantastic. That week,
oh yeah,
the third week of June is going to be amazing, right? I mean, you've got the expansion draft, you've got the entry draft. They're making an event out of it at the T-Mobile Arena. I think it's going to be unprecedented. I think this is going to be a one-time thing. When's this going to ever happen again, Dave? This is like, you know, a solar eclipse. You're going to happen, you know, once every 20 years maybe when you get an expansion team. And so I think it's going to be a fantastic week. And I think there is going to be a lot of activity.
There definitely will be. And maybe in, you know, 4 years when Seattle gets their team. But we'll talk about that later. But you're right. This is going to be an exciting time. We'll talk more about that after the break, because I want to touch on some of that Vegas situation after the break, which we'll take right now. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio.
We were staying in Paris. To get away from your parents, and I thought, wow, if I could take this in a shot right now, I don't think that we could work this out on a terrace. I don't know if it's fair, but I thought, how could I let you fall by yourself? Well, I'm wasted with someone else. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything, they'll say that I was clever. If we go down, then go down together, we'll get away with everything. Let's show them we are better.
Time to close things up here on the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Coming up later this evening, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Dave Gosher, Jim Fox's National Call on Sirius XM, NHL Network Radio tonight. That's channel 91, which you'd probably know because you're listening, right? So anyway, come back to this
channel.
Lock it in. Come back to this channel. Listen to the game. And yeah, Foxy and Dave, they'll take care of you. They got you. They'll get that game underway. It's going to be a good one. We were talking about Eberle and Vegas as a possibility prior to the break. Do you see another player, DB, kind of in this same boat? And maybe, and I'm just throwing this out at you, and it probably takes a little more time because you got to go through all the rosters, which I'm realizing I need to do as I'm asking this question. But in this final minute, do you see another player being a possibility for Vegas, like Jordan Eberle may possibly be for them?
From a skill standpoint, or just from a
that caliber player? I mean, we've talked a number of times about the possibility of Dustin Brown in Los Angeles. There's Jordan Eberle in Edmonton. Is there another player that fits this kind of mold?
The only other guy I would have had would have been Dustin Brown. But the question is, what's Vancouver going to do with this Sedin twins, Dave?
Well, it's
another thing. Maybe they can.
It's that, and
have
you
one
know
guy
what?
Selected and the other guy picked by a trade.
Jonas Brodin in Minnesota, could that be an option? Because the Wild are stacked on D. Yep. Somebody's going to go. So we'll see how that unfolds. We'll talk about maybe this next
Josh
week.
Josh Manson with Anaheim.
That's right. Another one who's starting to take things up. But that's it for us here on the program. 2 hours, quick 2 hours in the books. Want to thank Brent Wallace, Pete Jensen, Josh Brewster, Jimmy Fox, and Lindsay Raleigh for jumping on the program. It's been a good one. We got some good action coming at you later on tonight between the Preds and Ducks here on the channel. Thanks, Jesse Ralph behind the glass. That's Dennis Bernstein. I'm Dave Pignota. This has been the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio.